Welcome to Quilt Fiction. I'm your host, Frances O'Rourke Dow. To celebrate the holiday season, we'll be returning to Milton Falls, Ohio, this time to spend Christmas of 1932 with our old friendship album friend, Eula Baker. I hope you enjoy today's story. If you're looking for more quilt fiction, check out my books, Birds in the Air and Margaret Goes Modern, available via Amazon and easily ordered through your local independent bookshop. For more on quilt fiction, go to quiltfiction.com. Now, on with the story. Crazy Quilt, A Christmas Story, Eula, 1932, by Frances O'Rourke Dow. Christmas won't be Christmas without the boys, Eula fretted to Dan as she collected the last of the dishes from the dinner table. I'm not sure I've got the heart for it this year, if truth be told. Dan followed Eula into the kitchen. I wish I could convince you to go to your mother's on Christmas Eve. I don't mind taking you. And leave you to spend Christmas Eve and most of Christmas Day by yourself? Eula shook her head so hard it almost caused her to drop the plate in her hand. Well, I can't bear the thought of it, Dan. I wish you could find someone to keep the school furnace stoked so we could go to Mother's together. Nobody wants to work on Christmas, Dan replied with a resigned shrug, and if the furnace isn't tended to, the pipes might burst. I know, I know. Eula twisted the faucet to fill the sink. If the boys were here, we could still have a big time. It would be like Christmas back on the farm, except we wouldn't have to get up early on Christmas morning to do chores. Dan handed Eula a dish. I never minded getting up early to do chores on Christmas morning. It felt right, being in the barn with all the animals. He paused a moment, remembering. I liked listening to them, the way they shuffled around before they settled into their eating. I liked hearing the pigs snort and the cows. Well, the cows kind of sighed with contentment, if I recall correctly. I guess they did that every day, but on Christmas morning, I had the time to stop and listen. I like to think that those were the first sounds that the baby Jesus heard. The sighs of contented cows? Eula asked, one eyebrow raised. Exactly that, Dan replied, and the snorts of happy pigs at the trough. Eula laughed, and then she and Dan began their nightly ritual of washing up for dinner. When they'd still lived on the farm, Eula had always been by herself in the kitchen after dinner, while Dan and the boys went out to the barn to do the last of the evening's chores. She'd never minded. After a busy day doing her own work around the farm and the house, she was happy to have the time to herself to think and dream, work over a problem in her mind until she'd unknotted it to her satisfaction. But ever since they'd moved to Milton Falls in October, Dan had begun helping her with the dishes and the kitchen cleaning, and it hadn't taken long for them to settle into a comfortable routine of washing and drying, scrubbing and sweeping. Together, they'd made a fast job of it, 20 minutes start to finish, which meant they had longer to sit together in the front room, Dan with a book, Eula with her quilting. Dan still had to go to bed early. As the custodian of Milton Falls Elementary School, he needed to be on the job by 6:30 to stoke the furnace fires and make the rounds of the classrooms to check that all was in order before the students arrived at 8 o'clock. But back on the farm, his day had started at 4 a.m., which meant he was in bed the minute his evening chores were done. When Eula was counting her blessings, a daily exercise which had served her well during these hard times, she always included quiet evenings spent with her husband on her list of things to be thankful for. The Great Depression may have cost them their farm, but they still had each other. After the last dish had been dried and put up and the final crumb had been swept away, Eula hung her apron on the peg by the kitchen door. Well, Christmas isn't for a few days. Maybe you'll find someone to work for you, or maybe the boys will show up at the front door. Now, wouldn't that be the best present ever? Who knows what the day will bring? Dan asked. Maybe we'll have ourselves a good old-fashioned Christmas miracle. Eula followed Dan out of the kitchen, wishing she shared his optimism. She'd known scores of Christmas pleasures and experienced her share of Yuletide surprises, but a Christmas miracle? That seemed unlikely in this year where miracles had been in short supply from beginning to end. No, she needed to accept the fact that this Christmas wouldn't be much of a Christmas at all, a disappointment to be sure, but one that she would do her best to bear with good cheer and an eye to next year, when surely things would be better. Sitting down in her favorite chair, Eula leaned over and took out her latest project, an orange peel quilt she was almost done quilting. It was small, just the size for quilting on her lap with the wooden hoop to hold the layers together. One day, Eula was hoping to find new friends to sew with, friends who would circle around a frame and make an afternoon's work out of a quilt, no matter how large. But until she did, she'd stick to making quilts she could finish on her own. Eula had no idea what she was going to do with this one when she was done. She supposed she'd eventually find someone who could use it. After all, what was better than getting a new quilt? Why, not a thing in the world that Eula Baker could think of. Her lack of holiday cheer this year was, by any reckoning, an odd state of affairs. Eula had always been famous for her Christmas spirit. Every December as a girl, she'd collected pine cones, abandoned birds' nests, dry sweet gum pods, and whatever else that could be transformed with bits of ribbon into Christmas decorations. On Christmas Eve day, she carried a basket of her creations about the house, placing them on mantelpieces, windowsills, and the tops of dressers. She made wreaths out of rosemary and produced garlands of Douglas fir branches and bay leaves, leaving a fragrant trail in her wake as she hung them on the doors and walls. The entire Rhodes family was known to keep Christmas exceptionally well. Much of the month of December was given over to making gifts and preparing for the Christmas feast. As the day grew closer, the collective excitement grew to almost unbearable heights. Eula and her sisters would sit in the front room in the evenings, stringing cranberries and wondering about the mysterious sounds they heard from the parlor, which was hidden from them by a heavy double door. They tried to keep themselves distracted by chatting about their mother's Christmas cactus, which Mrs. Rhodes began fretting over every year in October, worried it wouldn't bloom by Christmas Day. It was a momentous occasion when the first buds appeared, and everyone had an opinion on exactly what day, sometimes the very moment, the flowers would blossom. On Christmas Eve itself, the six Rhodes children, Eula, her two older sisters and three younger brothers, could barely eat their supper, which is why their mother always served something simple, soup and bread, a plate of cheese, and another of pickles to be passed around the table. Mr. and Mrs. Rhodes chatted amiably over their brood's uncharacteristic silence and exchanged secret smiles across the table. Much to his children's chagrin, Mr. Rhodes would savor his after-dinner cup of coffee with particular and excruciating relish, sipping it so slowly that Eula often wondered whether it might evaporate before he had a chance to finish it. When the coffee was finally consumed and the children had to rush through the washing and drying of dishes, they gathered at the parlor door. Behind it, their mother played a plaintive version of Silent Night on the piano, and then, at long last, the doors were thrown open to reveal a majestic candlelit tree. Year after year, the magic of the moment never faded for Eula, even when she was nearly grown and engaged to be married. As a girl, it was true, much of the magic for Eula resided in the pile of presents beneath the tree's branches. Two gifts awaited each child, and they all had to stand by patiently as their father handed them out with a great deal of drama and ceremony. He had an annual rotation, one year beginning with the eldest child, big sister Cora, and then the following year with the youngest, the baby of the family, little Frank. For some reason, it never occurred to Mr. Rhodes that every third year he should begin his rounds in the middle, so Eula was never first or last, but always third or fourth in line. The older she got, the more she appreciated her position. She had to wait for her gift, yes, but she learned that waiting for a present was nearly as good as getting one, but not so good that she wanted to wait forever. The Rhodes children always received one practical gift each, woolen underwear, a knitted hat, or a pair of gloves, but the second gift was a treat. Dolls, yo-yos, tin soldiers, cat pistols, board games, books, and candy were just some of the wondrous things that might appear wrapped in fabric beneath the tree. Sometimes the second gift was an item a child had hinted about wanting. Other times it was a surprise and always a pleasant one. When Eula was 10, she'd received a copy of Little Women, a book she'd never heard of before, and proceeded to read 3 times before the new year. Christmas Day itself was a blur of activity, church in the morning and a feast in the afternoon, with aunts and uncles and cousins coming from miles around. If there was snow on the ground, and it was an unusual Christmas when there wasn't snow, the younger cousins went sledding after the noon Christmas dinner, and the older ones rode out in sleighs. In the evenings, after the remains of the feast had been eaten, the family gathered for songs and the reciting of poetry by the younger children. Sometimes the older children put on a skit. At the end of the evening, everyone left exhausted and full of good cheer, their warm farewells echoing through the icy air beneath a blanket of stars. When Eula was 6, she'd had a cold at Christmas and was under strict orders to stay inside when the rest of the children ran out into the snowy afternoon. She'd wandered through the clusters of grown-ups in search of entertainment, but their talk quickly tired her, so she made her way to the front room where her great-grandmother sat alone by the fire, some sort of sewing in her lap. Normally, Eula avoided Grandmother Anne, who was notoriously crotchety and did not suffer small children gladly. Moreover, the old woman had spent her childhood in England, and while she'd moved to America as a young bride, she'd never changed her opinion that Americans were uncivilized creatures who would have been better off remaining subject to the crown. Eula was too young to understand the origins of her great-grandmother's sentiments, but she thought being an American was a fine thing, and being an American born in the great state of Ohio was the best thing a person could hope to be. Still, on this particular Christmas afternoon, she was bored, and on top of that, she was curious about what Grandmother Anne was working on, especially since it seemed to involve some very pretty fabric. "Why aren't you with the others?" Grandmother Anne wanted to know when Eula approached her. "You should be outdoors." "I'm not allowed out," Eula admitted. "I have a cold." Her great-grandmother swatted the air as though she could chew Eula's words, and perhaps Eula herself, from the room. "Fresh air is the best thing for the sniffles. It keeps the blood circulating. Well, what are you staring at? And which one are you?" I'm Eula Jean Rhodes," Eula reported in her straightforward way. "And I'm staring at that fabric. It's awfully pretty." "Don't say awfully. It's slang," Grandmother Anne admonished. "But you have a good eye. This fabric is very pretty indeed. My sister sent it from London. The best fabric is British fabric, you know." Eula didn't know, but she was prepared to believe it. "What are you making?" "Curiosity killed the cat, little girl," Grandmother Anne quipped, but Eula only shrugged. "I'm a girl, not a cat," she replied. "Are you making a dress?" "You talk entirely too much," Grandmother Anne complained. "Do you see my sewing basket? Choose 2 squares of fabric, and I'll show you how to stitch them together." "Oh, you're making a quilt," Eula said as she reached into the basket. "My mother and sisters make quilts, but they say I'm too young. My fingers aren't long enough to work a needle yet." This provoked another swat in the air from Grandmother Anne. "Nonsense! I began stitching when I was 3. Eula spent the next 2 hours receiving instruction on how to construct a quilt block. "It will take practice to make a block that pleases you," Grandmother Anne informed her. "You'll be happiest if you keep in mind that only God is perfect, and you shall never be. Nonetheless, eventually your stitches will be good enough to hold the pieces together for many years' worth of washes. That's what matters in the end." Great-grandmother Anne lived long enough to see Eula's stitches become tiny and precise, and she was the recipient of the girl's first quilt, completed when she was 8. Every Christmas, the old woman brought Eula fabric sent from London by her sister, and every Christmas they sat by the fire and sewed together for a time, Eula chatting away and great-grandmother Anne periodically asking her to please hush. But Eula wasn't afraid of the old woman and so continued her mostly one-sided conversation, and in that way the two remained good friends until Grandmother Anne's death shortly after Eula turned 12. Not a Christmas passed that she didn't think fondly of her grandmother and the gift she'd given her, one of the best gifts Eula had ever received. After they got married and settled down on a farm in New Bethel, there'd never been a question that Eula and Dan would spend the main of their Christmases with her family in Homerville. They always stopped in to visit the Bakers, whose farm was only 5 miles from the roads, but Dan's brothers were so robust, their children so very wild, that it was less of a celebration than a free-for-all. When their own children arrived, Matt, followed closely behind by his brothers Douglas and then John, the young family stayed home on Christmas Eve, enjoying the same rituals Eula's family had always observed. Christmas morning, they did their chores, ate their usual breakfast, then dressed for church and dinner with Eula's family. It always surprised Eula at the end of the day to find herself in the wagon, calling out goodbyes as they headed back to New Bethel. She felt she should be crawling into bed with Cora and Delia, chattering about the wonders of the day until she drifted off to sleep, already longing for the next Christmas. Last Christmas it had been just the same, except for one thing. Eula had made the mistake of trying to include a new dish for breakfast, deciding after all these years that a meal of eggs, bacon, ham, biscuits, and beans was just too plain for such a festive day. On Christmas Eve, her neighbor, June Hennessy, had stopped by with a gift of raisins packed in a pretty jar and a little paper poke full of cinnamon. "Make yourself some cinnamon bread," June had instructed. "Your boys will love it." And so Eula had, and she'd made cinnamon rolls as well, and while she was at it, she'd made raisin muffins. She'd been sure the boys would be pleased to see such fare at the breakfast table, but Matt, the eldest and the leader, refused to even consider Eula's new addition to the menu. "We eat plain for breakfast and then a feast for dinner," he'd complained, snubbing the platter of cinnamon-scented breads and muffins. "That's the tradition." His younger brothers had eyed the treats with clear desire, but they would never go against Matt's decision to refuse them. In the end, Eula had packed the breads into a basket and taken them to Mother's after church. She supposed it was her own fault. She'd raised her boys to believe that Christmas traditions were set in stone and not to be trifled with. Clearly, they'd taken her lessons to heart. What would Christmas be like for the boys this year? Eula wondered as she set out on a shopping trip to Albert's Grocery the morning of the 23rd. Matt was doing itinerant farm work in California, and Doug and Johnny were in New York working construction jobs wherever they could get them. In his most recent letter home, Doug had written about a foreman who had made men work the first day on the job for free, a sort of audition to see if they had the necessary skills. He gave them the task of wheeling the barrels of wet concrete to where they were needed on the site. The handles of the barrels were crusted over where the concrete had dried on them, "like sea barnacles and razor sharp," Doug had written in his letter. Many of the men didn't have work gloves, and by the end of the day their hands were so badly cut they couldn't return the following morning. It was of no concern to the foreman. The wounded men would be easily replaced by another group of eager workers the next morning who would provide a similar free day's labor. Johnny and I have gloves, of course. Never leave the house without them, Doug had written. But we'd never work for a man like that. Eula should hope not, she thought now, recalling Doug's letter. She just hated that anyone had to. It was funny how hard times like these brought out the best in some people and the worst in others. Two blocks over, there was a long line of folks waiting to get their lunch at Our Savior Lutheran Church, and inside a group of dedicated volunteers were setting the tables and making sandwiches. She liked to think the world held more generous sandwich makers than cruel foremen, but sometimes she really had to wonder. It was 2 days before Christmas, and Eula supposed she needed to plan some sort of feast. Though how did you go about making a feast for two people? Back home, Mother would be preparing to feed 50 at least. She'd plan on roasting 3 geese, knowing that others would arrive with roasted chickens and turkeys, pots of greens and dishes of sweet potatoes and sweet corn, not to mention cakes, pies, and cookies. Eula hadn't been trained to cook a small Christmas dinner, and she didn't quite know where to start. She supposed she could roast a chicken. Eula kept a clutch of birds in her backyard, culled from the larger flock she'd had on the farm. But she didn't think she could bring herself to sacrifice one of them for Christmas dinner. Some days it felt as though her chickens were her only friends. She and Dan had lived in Milton Falls for such a short time, coming on 2 months now, and winter clearly wasn't the season for meeting folks. Now, living on a farm could be lonely, too, but there was always so much to do you didn't realize it most times. Funny thing was, winter was when Eula usually got most of her socializing in. The hard work of the year was done, and she could slow down for a bit, knowing that there was pork curing in the smokehouse, potatoes and squash keeping cool in the root cellar, and long rows of jarred preserves in the pantry. That was always the best feeling, knowing that you'd laid by enough food to get through the winter and spring and had a moment to breathe before it was time to plant next year's crops. There was still plenty of work to be done, but there was also time to gather together in somebody's parlor over a quilting frame and catch up on all the news. Now, don't go thinking about all that, Eula chided herself as she turned on to Eastern Avenue. Sure, she missed her friends, but she'd make new ones soon enough. It wasn't as though her neighbors had been unfriendly. After she and Dan had moved in, Mrs. Rebanks next door had come over with a loaf of freshly baked bread wrapped in a pretty dish towel, and Mrs. Archer across the street had left 2 jars of strawberry preserves on the front porch with a friendly note of welcome. The nice thing about where they lived now, Eula and Dan agreed, was that the yards were large, and come spring they'd be able to put in a vegetable garden out back and a flower garden in the front. That's when they'd start meeting folks. Eula was sure of it. When she was out front with the trowel planting her black-eyed Susans and Echinacea. Women loved to chat about their gardens, and Eula anticipated a stream of neighbors stopping by on a pretty April morning to discuss the best spot for a pyracantha bush or where a stand of foxglove might thrive. And, with any luck, some of those friendly gardeners might also be quilters. There was nothing Eula liked better than sitting in a room full of women, all of them stitching away and talking. Albers appeared in the distance, and Eula turned her thoughts to her shopping. She was hoping inspiration would strike when she entered the market. The fact was, it still startled her a bit to walk into a grocery store and see all the things there were to buy. Not only that, but at Albers, you did your own shopping, going from shelf to shelf and choosing what you pleased. Back in New Bethel, there'd been one small grocery store, and when you were in need of something, you made a list, which you handed to the grocer, Mr. Shelby, or one of his assistants, who returned in a short time with your order packed in brown paper. Eula's grocery lists were always short in those days. Sugar, flour, coffee, and not much else. Now they were considerably longer. Today, however, she had no list at all. She would walk the store's perimeters in hopes of making some wonderful discovery, the exact thing to make Christmas merry. As soon as she entered the store, Eula was met by the smell of freshly ground coffee. Grinding your coffee beans for you while you shopped was a service Albers provided to all of its customers, though it was one Eula would never avail herself of. She couldn't imagine giving up the pleasure of giving the grinder a few good turns and breathing in the lovely scent that resulted. Why, it was a reason to get up in the morning. There was a crowd of shoppers in the store, small flocks of women fluttering around the meat and bread counters and chatting beneath the pyramids of canned goods. One woman stood in front of the window in which a large plucked turkey was suspended by its feet. "It's something out of Dickens, isn't it?" the woman said when she noticed Eula. "I half expect Ebenezer Scrooge to come through the door any moment." "According to the butcher, this one's already been bought and paid for, but there'll be more tomorrow. Oh, I do love turkey at Christmas." Eula agreed. A roast turkey would make a fine Christmas dinner. Her icebox was nearly empty. If she ordered a turkey and brought it home tomorrow, she could keep it cool until Christmas morning when she'd pop it in the oven first thing. Of course, with only two of them at home, a turkey this size was too much food. And, she thought, eyeing the price tag that dangled from the dead bird's foot, much too expensive. No, she should find something smaller and preferably something that didn't cost a week's wages. It wasn't until she was on her way home, having somehow ordered a turkey in spite of the expense and having filled her basket with all manner of items, that Eula realized she'd bought much more than she and Dan could ever eat in one meal. What on earth had come over her? She was a frugal woman to begin with, and these were times that called for economy, not extravagance. It was almost as though she'd left her own body for a spell as she'd wandered through the store, her hand under someone else's control as it plucked all sorts of unlikely items, cloves and orange peel, a bunch of bananas, canned pumpkin, canned pineapple rings, salted nuts, chestnuts, and Brussels sprouts from the shelves and bins. Peering into her grocery bags now, it occurred to Eula that she should turn around immediately and return every last thing right after she canceled her order for a turkey. She could get a canned ham for Christmas dinner, even though she knew it wouldn't taste anything like the hams they cured on the farm. Still, a canned ham was fine, perfectly fine, and she should go buy one right this very minute. But for some reason, she didn't turn around, even as she willed her feet to do just that. In spite of all her best intentions, Eula marched toward home, feeling foolish, but apparently unable to do anything about it. She slept poorly that night. The evening before, she'd longed to confess to Dan, thinking that once she said out loud what she'd done, the spell would be broken, and she could march over to Albers in the morning, return the cloves and the canned pumpkin, the extra pound of sugar she surely didn't need, cancel her order for a turkey and buy a ham instead. But much in the same way that she hadn't been able to make herself return to the store that morning, she couldn't seem to open her mouth and say, "Dan, I spent too much money at the grocer's today. It'll make you laugh when I tell you all the things I bought." When Eula woke up Christmas Eve morning, after a night of confusing dreams about trying and failing to make a decent turkey gravy, Dan was finishing up his coffee before heading to work. "Look at that snow," he said, pointing out the window. "It's like clouds of white feathers spilling from the sky." It was a pretty snow indeed, lacy and delicate, the flakes melting into the ground as soon as they landed. After Dan left for work, Eula stood at the window and continued to watch the snow come down. According to her mother, snow on Christmas Eve day meant it would be an especially fine Christmas. Eula's mother always saw good omens in nature. Rain on the first day of April meant you'd make a new friend by mid-month. A full moon on your birthday meant the next year would be full of happy coincidences. Eula was fairly sure these predictions were the product of her mother's fertile imagination. She'd never heard anyone else say such things. Nonetheless, the idea that this snow signaled a nice Christmas awaited them pleased Eula and firmed her resolve to return to Albers first thing. Tomorrow, she and Dan would have a fine Christmas dinner of ham, rolls, baked beans, and green beans, followed by one of Eula's prize-winning chocolate cakes. That would be plenty and enough. Maybe she should get out her baking supplies before she left, Eula thought as she washed out her coffee cup in the sink. Albers wouldn't open for another hour. She could make the dough for her icebox cookies, which would be chilled by the time she returned home. She knew the recipe by heart. First thing was to measure out 4 cups of flour. What seemed like only a few moments later, Eula glanced up at the clock. 2 hours had passed. Not only that, she seemed to have just finished preparing a plum pudding. She hadn't made a plum pudding in years. But she'd noticed a few jars of plums that she'd brought with her from the farm, and one thing led to another. Well, at least she had made good use of the currants and orange peel she'd bought the day before, she thought, and then remembered that she'd intended to return those very items to the store. How on earth had she reckoned she and Dan would eat a chocolate cake and a plum pudding? Eula fussed at herself as she pulled off her apron and went to change into something suitable for her trip into town. She'd always been such a sensible woman, and now this! Clearly, all the changes and upheavals of the past year had done something to her mind. Unhinged it completely, it appeared. When she returned to the kitchen to pack up her groceries to take them back to Albers, Eula felt that she'd completely lost her senses. Where was that canned pineapple? And what had she done with those chestnuts? Nothing seemed to be where she remembered putting it. She supposed the canned goods would keep until the following week, and she could return them then. And as for the chestnuts and the Brussels sprouts, it wasn't like she couldn't make use of them. Dan always did enjoy roasted Brussels sprouts, after all. That left the turkey to be dealt with. Eula quickly pulled on her coat and headed out the door. The snow was growing heavier, and she'd forgotten her gloves, but she forged ahead. There was no time to waste. The turkey that hung that morning in the window of Albert's grocery was massive, much bigger than the one from the day before. Surely it wasn't the turkey Eula had ordered. She'd specifically told the butcher's boy she wanted a turkey on the small side. The turkey in the window was at least 20 pounds. It would fit in Eula's oven, but only just. Not that it was her turkey. No, the turkey in the window must be for a large family expecting a great deal of company on Christmas Day. "Mrs. Baker, you're here!" The butcher, Mr. Doherty, called from across the counter. "Isn't that a glorious bird?" "The bird in the window is a very fine bird indeed," Eula replied, making her way across the store. "Now I need to talk to you about the turkey I ordered." "I'll get the boy to wrap it up right away," Mr. Doherty interrupted. "You'll need to keep it cold. I'd say it'll take a good 4 hours to roast, so plan on getting up early tomorrow morning." With that, he came around the corner and, much to Eula's dismay, headed for the front window. Eula followed him and began her protest. "Oh, that's much too big, Mr. Doherty. I told the boy I wanted a turkey on the small side, and to be honest, I was coming in this morning to cancel my order." The butcher turned to look at her, eyes wide. "Cancel your order? You want to cancel your order on Christmas Eve?" "I don't mean to inconvenience you," Eula told the butcher, "but someone else will want to buy it. Why, it'll only be a moment before someone walks in and says, 'How much is that turkey in the window? I just have to have it.'" "It's 11:30, Mrs. Baker, and we close at noon," Mr. Doherty told her. "Besides, not one person has walked in this morning and made a query about this turkey. You know why? Because no one buys a 22-pound turkey on Christmas Eve. This isn't a Christmas carol." "Scrooge actually bought his turkey on Christmas morning," Eula pointed out, even though she was beginning to suspect hers was a lost cause. "We're not open Christmas morning, Mrs. Baker. Do you really want this beautiful purr to go to waste? Because that's what will happen if you don't buy it." Eula did not want the turkey to go to waste. "Could you at least have your boy deliver it?" she asked, in way of concession. "It's too big for me to carry home on foot." The butcher smiled broadly, once again happy to be of service. "Of course, Mrs. Baker. We always deliver to our best customers." Walking home, the snow considerably thicker on the ground, Eula thought it a tender mercy she wasn't carrying the bird. Surely she wouldn't make it more than a few steps without toppling over onto the snowy sidewalk. Mr. Doherty said that his boy would be by early in the afternoon, which gave Eula enough time to arrange her icebox so there'd be more room to store it. After that, she'd make a chestnut stuffing, and then she'd begin on the pies. Pies? Where had that idea come from? She and Dan didn't need pies on top of chocolate cake and plum pudding. Nonetheless, as Eula continued to walk toward home, visions of pies danced through her head. Pumpkin, mincemeat, apple, the list went on and on. Eula had just placed the turkey in the roasting pan on Christmas morning, resting it atop a nest of onions, carrots, and celery, when Dan came into the kitchen. She told him the night before that she'd bought a larger bird than she'd intended, but he hadn't actually seen the turkey until now. "Eula, did you invite someone over for Christmas dinner and forget to mention it to me?" Dan asked as he examined the bird in its pan. "The high school marching band or several local Boy Scout troops?" "I told the butcher I wanted a small turkey, but this is what I got instead," Eula explained. "I tried to refuse it, but Mr. Doherty said the bird would go to waste." "So it looks like we'll be eating turkey for the next couple of weeks, if not years," Dan said, before turning to survey the rest of the kitchen. "I'm sorry, Miss Eula Jean, but have you opened up a pie shop? Because I see an awful lot of pies here." "I got a little carried away with the pies," Eula admitted. "I don't know what's come over me, Dan. I just can't seem to stop cooking." Dan glanced at the clock on the wall over the sink. "Well, my girl, I need to get over to the school and work up an appetite. Try to stay out of the kitchen until I get back. Between the turkey and the pies, I won't have room for much else." As soon as Dan left, Eula began carrying the pies to the side table in the dining room. There were 5 in all, which was half as many as Eula had made the year before. She'd always taken 5 pies to mothers and kept 5 at home for their own holiday feasting. So 5 pies on the sideboard seemed exactly right. But a Christmas feast should include more than turkey and pie. As soon as she pulled the bird out of the oven, she'd put in a batch of rolls, and Eula stopped short. She suddenly remembered where she'd stored the canned pumpkin. Even though Dan was right and they already had plenty of food, just the other day she'd come across a recipe for chestnut pumpkin soup in The Farmer's Wife. A bowl of soup wouldn't hurt anybody, nor would a fruit salad or some roasted Brussels sprouts, come to think of it. Eula marched back into the kitchen. There was a lot of work to be done between now and noon. She'd better get started. She was sitting on the couch in the front room when Dan got home, a strange sense of calm having settled over her once she'd pulled the last dish, a pan of glazed carrots, from the stove and transferred it to a serving plate. In the dining room, the table was so crowded with food that there was no place to actually eat, but Eula couldn't be bothered about that. She assumed that once Dan came in and saw the state of things, he'd quietly bundle her up and take her to the hospital, or wherever you took middle-aged women who'd finally gone crazy once and for all. Dan came and sat next to her. "Well, Eula Jean, you've made quite a feast." Eula began to weep softly. "I don't understand it, Dan. I really don't. I believe all the hardships of this year have caused me to lose my mind. I thought I was bearing up. I prayed every day to accept our losses and be grateful for all the good things that remain. but clearly I've been brought low by hard times. Or maybe you've got the Christmas spirit in a way you've never had it before, Dan suggested in a gentle voice. Maybe something's going on that hasn't been made clear to you yet. Eula looked at her husband. The Christmas spirit? Why, Dan, I haven't felt any Christmas spirit whatsoever this year. We never even got a tree. We did say we were going to keep it small and simple, Dan reminded her. But I think there's something else happening here. That's right, Eula agreed, nodding vigorously. I've lost my mind. That is what's going on here. Dan stood and walked over to the window. When I left the school a few minutes ago, a man was waiting outside the door, and we got to talking. Times have been hard for him and his family, same as for so many others this year. But up until recently, Frank Hummel is the man's name. Well, he and his wife were able to make do. He's a handyman who picks up jobs wherever he can, and his wife has been taking in laundry and doing mending, making a quarter here, a dollar there. They've got three young boys who are healthy and strong and help out however they can. They're good boys, just like ours. But Frank's wife fell sick in October, and now they're destitute with nobody to help them. Frank was waiting outside of the school to ask me if there was any work he could do. Oh, if only you'd met him yesterday, Eula exclaimed. He could have tended the furnaces, and we could have gone to Mother's. I had the same thought, Dan agreed, and I told him so. He suggested that it wasn't too late for us to ride out to Homerville this afternoon. We could be there before they even finished eating. Frank could check the furnace later today and then first thing in the morning if we wanted to stay over. I told him I liked that idea very much. But there's another thing, Eula. The reason this man is out on Christmas looking for work is that his family hasn't had anything to eat all week. Dan turned from the window. Not a bite, not a crust, for the entire week. Well, when he told me that, that's when I knew, Eula Jean. That's when I understood why you bought all this food. Eula stared at Dan as his meaning came clear to her. Oh, she said slowly. Oh. I told you we might have us a miracle this year. Dan shook his head and laughed. I've spent 2 days trying to figure out what happened to my sensible, frugal wife. I have to say it's a relief to know that it was just the Christmas spirit moving you in mysterious ways. Eula didn't bother replying. She didn't have time to discuss metaphysics, not when there was so much work to be done. It took them 20 minutes to get the food packed up and into the back of the truck. When the last pie had been wrapped in a towel and placed under the driver's seat, Eula brought out her just-finished quilt, the neat rows of orange peel blocks bright in the gray light of the early afternoon. She placed it over the boxes and bags that held the feast. "For your wife," she told Mr. Hummel. "A quilt is always a cheerful thing, especially when you've been under the weather for a spell." Mr. Hummel took Eula's hand. "I hope my wife can come call on you when she's well again. She'll want to thank you." "Oh, I'd be very pleased if she came to visit," Eula told him. "We haven't met a lot of folks since we moved into town. I'd like a friend." "Oh, believe me, you'll have one, Mrs. Baker," Mr. Hummel told her with a courtly bow. "You already have a friend in me." Eula and Dan watched the old truck roll down the street and turn right on Eastern Avenue. "Well, I think that's about the nicest Christmas present I've ever received," Eula said, shivering a little in the cold December air.
"You mean the nicest present you've ever given," Dan corrected her.
"Oh, I know what I mean, Dan Baker," Eula told her husband and turned to go back inside. "Now, come on. I want to get to Mother's before the food runs out. I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse." Dan's laughter followed Eula into the house, which she realized as she began to pack her things for the trip to Homerville smelled an awful lot like Christmas.
Thanks for listening to this Quilt Fiction story. For more information, go to quiltfiction.com and be sure to sign up for our newsletter when you get there. Also, consider joining our fabulous Facebook community, the Quilt Fiction Club. Happy holidays, everyone.